Welcome to a new episode of the States and Migration in Europe podcast. Today's episode delves into the realities of one of Europe's largest and most marginalized ethnic minorities, the Roma, against the backdrop of the European Union's freedom of movement. Joining us is Dr. Julia Sardelic, a luminary in Romani studies. Dr. Sardelic's latest book, The Fringes of Citizenship, Romani Minorities in Europe and Civic Marginalization, offers an unparalleled window into the experiences of the Roma in Europe. Her expertise not only sheds light on their marginalization, but also ignites discussions on the essential facets of citizenship and belonging in Europe. In this episode, we embark on a journey with Dr. Sardelic, starting from her initial engagement with Roma studies. Then we will explore how state policies have contributed to the marginalization of the Roma and how the EU's free movement applies or not to Roma. So stay with us as we unravel all these themes with Dr. Julia Sardelic. So Julia, thank you very much for being here and talk with us about the Roma.
Thank you very much, Emmanuel, for inviting me to your podcast. I'm very happy to be here. And thank you very much to all the listeners who are listening. What I think I will actually talk about is more about policies around citizenship that frame the position of Roma. So as in my book, I try to say that I do not speak in the name of Roma because I do not have Romani background myself. There are a number of fantastic Romani scholars, critical Romani scholars, especially, for example, if I mention two of them, one is Angela Kotze, who is the chair of Romani studies at the Central European University, and also Dr. Margareta Matashe, who is the leader of the Roma program at Harvard University. And they might be able to shed experiences and also theoretically look at the experiences of Roma from the perspective of Roma. But what I try to do and what I hope we will talk more about is what does the position of Roma and the marginalization that Roma experience, what does that tell us about how citizenship in Europe is formed, and what does that tell us about migration studies and so on? And I think that this is where I try to contribute to basically the discussion.
Yes, perfect, perfect. Before we get started, Julia, how did you come to study the Roma in Europe?
So, as I said, I try. I think it's
why did you get
say,
interested
yes.
into this topic?
Yes. So basically, I came a little bit from the back door into academia because I used to, in my 20s and even in my teenage year, I worked for Romani-led NGOs where I supported Roma NGOs to basically for empowerment of Roma communities around Europe, especially in Central and Southeastern Europe. And we had quite a number of successes as working in this NGO. So from basically highlighting where Roma are potentials, not problems, because usually they're considered as problems and so on. But I got to the point of frustration where I saw that, okay, you can have a lot of fantastic grassroots initiatives that highlight what's the importance of Roma in Europe and basically also talents of Roma and so on. Well, at the same time, it's really quite problematic when you have quite exclusionary citizenship and migration policies, both in different countries that actually frame this position that are often even racist. And this is what I try to talk about in my book, that we need to think about citizenship.
You became interested into this topic because you were already working for NGOs.
Yes.
Helping Roma people, correct?
So not helping, but actually what was working in collaboration is more supporting the empowerment of Roma communities that they can actually advocate for themselves. So I knew that I didn't want to like frame it, oh, I'm the savior who's coming to the Roma community and so on. Not at all. It was basically more of an allyship where Roma were the ones who were leading the NGOs, but I was actually there under the leadership of different Roma organizations where I worked to support.
Okay, so you were working for a Roma NGO.
Mm-hmm. But yes.
Why did you work for them? Was this an opportunity you mm-hmm. get?
And no, so, okay, there is a backstory.
You thought you wanted specifically to work with Roma.
So there's a backstory about this. So I grew up in the region of former Yugoslavia, especially in the northeast part of Slovenia that borders the Hungarian border. And I went to a bilingual Slovenian Hungarian school. And there, like, multiculturalism was always celebrated. So basically, Slovenian children, Hungarian children were awarded for speaking their languages. But then when it came to Roma, they were actually punished when they spoke their own language. And for me, like, on one hand, it was like this big celebration of multiculturalism. And it was only some kind of multiculturalism. It was only some children that were allowed to express themselves in their own language and basically nurture their languages. And Roma were not allowed. Roma children were not allowed to do that.
You mean by the school? The school.
Yes, yes.
And was it a private school or a public school?
Public school.
From Yugoslavia or from Slovenia?
That was Slovenia already.
It was already Slovenia.
Mentioned where there was a parallel school in the little town where I grew up. It was a school for children for special needs. And it was quite well known that this school was actually full of Roma children. It was actually a segregated school where most of the Roma children would go. So I had a privilege to go to the mainstream school, while I would say 80% of Roma children that were that were like my generation, would not actually be in the same school with me. So maybe 20% would be, but most of them would be in the segregated schooling.
So this interdiction at school to speak mm-hmm. Romani had on you the exact opposite effect of making you more interested in the Roma, correct?
It made me not interested in Roma, but I ask a question, why is this multiculturalism that is celebrated so extraordinary? Why does it celebrate certain languages? Why does it celebrate certain cultures? But then again, others do not have this opportunity to talk their language, to talk about their culture. That changed in a while. So the Romani International Day celebration and so on. So basically I said, okay, if we're really thinking about true multiculturalism, then it has to be for everyone, not just for certain groups.
Okay, and so this reaction that you had led you into working for a Roma NGO?
Yes. So this led me to actually say, okay, how can we create a different society where there is no, so that we can actually, on one hand, address racism, because Roma do face racism in Europe. They face racism because many times because of the skin color, they face racism because of belonging to certain ethnicity. And the racism is actually visible in from stuff to beating up, like, so basically there's a number of Roma who get beat up by police and so on. And
did you witness some of those cases?
Yes, I did. I did witness some of the very bad
cases. As a child, when you were young.
So not directly as a child. As a child, I saw systemic racism. I saw cases of systemic racism in a way like that Roma children were mostly in segregated schools.
Witnessing systemic racism towards Roma minorities in Slovenia when you were young, and this led you to work for an NGO of Roma people and get closer to those people. That's quite an interesting reaction. You really went into this community from which you seem to be separated by the public school system. And so you went into this NGO and then you decided to become a researcher on this situation to better understand why Romani minorities were marginal and what was the construction of this situation at the European level.
Yes, so basically it wasn't just Slovenia, it was other places in former Yugoslavia as well, because when I was working for this NGO, it was a grassroots NGO, so we connected to other Romani NGOs around the region, for example in Hungary, but also other places in especially Southeast Europe. Basically, what we're trying to do in this Roma NGO is empower Roma people themselves to address the racism that was happening to them. And racism was quite widespread. Like I said, 20% of Romani children were in the mainstream school. In my hometown at that time in the 90s was actually in the segregated school for children with special needs, which meant that many of them couldn't go to high school. Many of them, university was out of the question. So it's like basically systemic racism that they were put there. And one of the reasons why they were put there was that when they were looked at through psychological tests, it was decided that they cannot go to mainstream school because they do not know the language. So it was really interesting, really ironic how their language, the Romani language, affected the future. And this is the systemic racism.
Yeah, so I understand it was not based on their ethnicity itself that they were not in the main school system, but based on indicators like language knowledge or other cognitive capacities that specialists or doctors would put them outside of the mainstream system into a specialized system, which did not provide the same opportunities as the mainstream system.
In my book, I discussed cases like this, especially at the European Court of Human Rights, because that was the claim. It was actually specialist knowledge and basically because certain handicaps that were put into segregated schools. But that's actually not correct. The cases like DH and others versus Czech Republic and then Orsus and others versus Croatia and a number of other cases have shown that, okay, it was manifestly because of different reasons. In the end, the cases showed that there's widespread discrimination against Roma. It was actually on the basis of their ethnicity that they were put into these schools.
What do you mean on the basis of their ethnicity? It's because there was a piece of legislation that said Romani people have to be in this school?
It was
indirect. Or is it because the doctors who were making these evaluations were biased?
It was the court showed indirect discrimination.
Indirect.
So, indirect discrimination. However, according to the European Court of Human Rights, the outcome is important. So,
of course.
The outcome is,
So but the mechanism was based on bias within the system.
Yeah,
but let's continue on that. What kind of methods did you use? You say you are not a Roma person yourself, but you have worked with Romani people. You referred at the beginning of the episode to the fact that other scholars were better than you at describing the experiences of those people, and you were more focused on policy. So what kind of research methods have you used?
I work in citizenship and migration studies. In my research, I mostly use qualitative approaches of socio-legal studies, which means that I study legislation, laws on the national levels, but also European levels, as well as policies that affect Roma. These policies might be the policies that directly are talking about Roma. For example, in Slovenia, you have the Roma Community Act that talks about the rights that Roma have. It could be the national strategies on Romani integration, but it could be also laws that do not talk actually directly about Roma, but do have indirect discrimination attached to it.
So you analyze pieces of legislation, the policy process that relates directly or indirectly to Roma people. And so your sources are based on legislation and artifacts of the policy process, like meetings, minutes, notes, and so on.
Yes, exactly. And also judgments, like, for example, judgments from the European Court of Human Rights. So I try to turn things around, because usually when people study a position of Roma, they come from the position that this is the most ethnically discriminated minority or the socio-disadvantaged group. But what I try to look at is actually to look at how Roma are positioned as citizens. And I came not from looking at Roma as such, but came from what does citizenship lead to And what I discovered is that even in liberal democracies, which all the European Union member states claim to be at least, and they are, you would see this marginalization happening. And what is even interesting is that like a lot of scholarship has been done that marginalization is happening mostly towards migrant population. But what I try to show in my book is that this is not the case necessarily, that is also towards the traditional minorities. So in 1993, the Council of Europe said that Romani minorities are European minority par excellence because they live in every single country around European Union except for Malta and very small minorities in Cyprus, but everywhere else you have Roma as citizens. But how do we get to the position where in many places we have Roma communities that don't have access to drinking water, which is really quite widespread? So this is the reality of some of the European Union citizens.
So, okay, let's now enter into the main insights of your research. In your book, you have very interesting points. I quote your book, states are willing to support benevolent policies towards marginalized minorities, but only if they do not address the original structures upon which these states themselves are built. Mm-hmm. Can you explain?
Yes. So let's take freedom of movement. Let's take this example. Most of the European Union member states accepted that freedom of movement of European Union citizens is something that is positive. And it was positive as long as it was seen as something positive for the states. For example, you get workers, you get basically maybe students and so on. But when it comes to the position of people who are discriminated in every country, all of a sudden you have this, okay, we do not want to accept other countries' problems. That's how it was seen. Let me add on this. Mostly in Central and Eastern Europe, you have ethno-nationalism very much present. You have the majority state, they would describe themselves as nation. For example, in Slovenia, it would be Slovenians. And as long as you will have minority policies for Roma, but also other minorities, this would not be the question that the main majority nation is still the main people in power. So most of the minority policies work in a way to justify that there is one majority people who have most of the power. And that is especially visible when it comes to Roma, because where you have national minority protection and rights, it's usually of a lesser extent than other minorities.
And you mentioned in your book some mechanisms about this. First of all, you mentioned the question of statelessness. Mm-hmm. So that is the idea that lessness or a product, you argue, of state policy towards towards Roma mm-hmm. communities. I find this mechanism interesting. Often towards minorities, there is this notion that states are going to help them because normal social relationship, intrinsic biases, and so on and so forth, would marginalize those people. But what you argue is that the states themselves are at the root of the marginalization of those people. And you give the case of the production of statelessness. So mm-hmm. how do states marginalize those people by making them?
Yes, so this is quite a complex mechanism. And I will give you two answers to that. After the disintegration of former Yugoslavia, people would become citizens of new states. So most of the people who ended up stateless without the new citizenship were actually Roma. And how did this happen? It was because they somehow fell through cracks. Most people say, oh, that's because they didn't have documents, but that's actually not true. So it would be because of different registration mechanisms, how, for example, somebody would be born in one state, but then maybe residing in another because they were expelled from one country. For example, many Roma were expelled from Kosovo and then lived in Montenegro and refugee camps that still exist to the present day. And they ended up stateless because they couldn't prove, on one hand, that they have a citizenship. The registries were destroyed. But it was also that how they were positioned. They were not positioned as refugees, so they couldn't get a citizenship after being recognized as refugees because they crossed what later became a border. They were still recognized internally displaced, and they could not get citizenship of new states. And this is not the question only in former Yugoslav states. Let's take, for example, Italy. There's a few thousands of Roma who are stateless in Italy. And most of them came from former Yugoslavia as refugees. But because they were stateless, they couldn't get the refugee status. Later on, they got the statelessness determination process. But there were bizarre questions like, okay, you need to prove that you're not a citizen of any state, which literally meant that you have to go to every embassy in the world and they have to claim you're not our citizen. Later on, that changed. So this changed, and it was only like basically countries that were somehow connected to you. But what I'm trying to say is that through different policies, and this was one of them, that the stateless determination procedure did not take this into account. It is ridiculous to look at all the states in the world and not claim like state that they would like say that you're not their citizen. And a number of other administrative hurdles. Here, Nando Sigona is the scholar. He's at the University of Birmingham, who talked about Roma who were camps in Italy and how they had been stateless. And it was mostly through these mechanisms that they couldn't get citizenship of the states where they're living. Later on, because a lot of efforts has been made by different NGOs, especially NGOs connected to the European network of statelessness, these procedures have been changed. But for a very long time, it was the case that if you're stateless, you're in this vicious circle that you could not get recognition and you didn't have a pathway as refugees, usually because of the Article 34 in the 1951 Refugee Convention have that the state should encourage, facilitate access to citizenship where you have the recognition of refugees. But stateless people who were mostly Roma did not have that.
Mm-hmm. So there were specific hurdles to warn them.
Yes.
That made them stateless or kept them mm-hmm. in a state of statelessness.
But exactly.
To some extent, here, these are states just not willing to integrate those people until they reject them one way or another. Mm-hmm.
That's another part of the story, so yeah.
Here we are facing a process of rejection, which itself lead to marginalization. But
exactly.
This rejection, in the first place, comes from perhaps the poverty of those people, or
I don't think,
not only the poverty, perhaps the feeling that they are different.
So that's the thing. I think that we need to look at this from a different perspective. We need to question what kind of citizenship that claims to have possibilities to be all-inclusive towards everyone. Most of the liberal citizenship policies are built in a way that everyone should actually have access to citizenship and then have access to citizenship rights.
I don't know if most countries in Europe or in even beyond would accept that. Many countries yes, you have mechanisms to award citizenship, but many states want to select who they admit and who they don't admit. In the case of Roma, it's pushed quite far in the sense that it will move them into statelessness. Because the issue of statelessness, perhaps we need to give this element of background. Statelessness has kind of very dangerous implications. You know, this literature on the Holocaust and the points made by the historian Timothy Snyder, but not only him, was that at the end of the day, when things turn very bad, between states, by the way, when things turn very bad between states, those who suffer the most are the stateless, because there is no state there to protect them.
Exactly. But this is the argument that was taken from Hannah Arendt, the origin of from the origin of totalitarianism. She pointed out to irony of establishing the human rights system and establishing that citizenship is the right to have rights, to quote Hannah Arendt. The problem with this is that a lot of policymakers took that as, oh, that's great. So let's just have citizenship and that means that we'll solve all the problems. But that's not what Hannah Arendt meant. Hannah Arendt meant that rights should belong to every human being. And European Union has the charter of these rights. And yes, okay, states want to limit who they accept as citizens. On the other hand, they're all bound to the European Charter of Fundamental Rights. And
yes, which came after the Holocaust and the Second World War.
Yes, exactly.
So just to make it clear, what we are talking about here, I don't agree with the idea states want to integrate anyone. They don't. But on the other hand, in a world of states, anyone who is not integrated with a state at some point loses what you, and you refer to an Arendt here, even his right to have rights and his right perhaps even to live. That's a danger. In certain danger, circumstances, yeah. You can be stateless and perhaps go with that for a while. But in a world in which a state will power, exert force, exert violence, those stateless are the first to go.
Exactly.
So the production of statelessness is perhaps not a crime, but it's a crime by omission.
At it least is a not. Crime.
So that's why when states are ready to go with this notion that they want to select who they integrate, as far as denying someone the possibility of belonging to a state, it's a stretch. It's a stretch. Hence what you were saying earlier, that initially they would not acknowledge that they do that, but they expected the Roma to demonstrate, oh, are you sure there is not any state that protects you? And this created massive hurdles for those people.
Yeah. Can I comment two things here? So during the Holocaust, during the genocide, it wasn't only Jews who were victims of genocide. It was also Roma. They were stripped of citizenship in a similar way as Jews were. Also, a lot of Roma died in concentration and extermination camps. This is something not to forget. This is one point. The other point that I would like to raise here is the question of integration. What does integration mean? In the latest migration studies literature, we have Willem Schinkel, who talks against migrant integration because he sees that as the neo-colonial knowledge production, which ignores the fact that a lot of migration has happened because of colonialism. And then this is deleted from the analysis. But then we talk about why don't these people want to integrate into our Western societies. The problem with this kind of thinking, and it comes also to Roma, the European Union made this framework for national strategies for Roma integration. And that has been criticized from the very beginning because it was based on this idea that Roma need to integrate. And there was no question what actually hinders integration. There was no question of the racism towards Roma that produces the exclusion. And my argument is that this is by design. It's not a side product.
Yeah. Okay. So we have talked about statelessness and how it shows how far states are going to go when trying to exclude Roma in particular. Many states don't want them and are going to very great length to do that. The second thing that you highlight in your book is this issue of states producing the marginalization of Roma. It's a vicious thing because it's a backlash against precisely programs for Roma. That is, at the beginning of the episode, I said you were working for an NGO helping migrants, and you immediately reacted and said, no, we were not helping them. This reaction is part of a context in which there has been precisely a backlash because you had programs supposedly to help Roma.
Yeah.
And this created a backlash in the rest of the population, thinking, oh, why do you have a program to help them and not us? And this led to further marginalization of Roma. That is, the very program supposed to help them, at the end of the day, produces the opposite effect. Am I correct?
Exactly. That's the problem. So instead of addressing the core, that is anti-Roma racism, many critical Romani scholars call this anti-Gypsyism. So if you do not address how this is produced, it's a little bit cynical to then say, okay, we have this situation, now we're going to integrate Roma, we're going to help Roma integrate, but not question why their policies in citizenship and migration produce this marginalization in the first place. So I wanted to change the perspective in my book, not to focus what can Roma do and what are Roma doing, because in the end of the day, what I find out through this collaboration within Romani grassroots NGOs, it's not actually Roma who are the problem here. The first problem is from discrimination, marginalization, and racism that needs to be addressed. For example, many times they say, oh, Roma live in informal illegal settlements, but they do not question the history, how it got there. Let's say former Yugoslavia had a number of places where they designated Roma could live. That's also in Slovenia the case. But what was interesting, after the disintegration of former Yugoslavia, this land that was previously nationalized was denationalized, returned to previous owners, and all of a sudden, Roma, who were living on this land where they were designated, where the state said you should live there, are now living on private land. So we need to look at the history a little bit, and we need to look at what has been happening through these policies that prevented Roma from buying properties, because this is a very long history of exclusion of Roma from Middle Ages.
And last point, so the production of statelessness, the backlash related to public programs for Roma. And third point, third mechanisms I have noted in your book with which state policies marginalize Roma, it's labor market exclusion.
Yes.
As you mentioned the story of someone in the book, his name is
Muich.
Could you tell us where he lived and what was the story of his exclusion from work?
Yes, so Nazif Muich is quite a tragic story. Nazif Muich was an actor in the movie, an episode in the life of an iron picker. And for his role in this movie, he won a Silver Bear for the best actor. So the movie was about his life. His wife was stateless. She had a miscarriage and complications because of the miscarriage. She needed like urgent surgery. But because she didn't have documents, she borrowed documents from somebody in their community who had documents and can access healthcare like this. In the end, he sold his car as an old scrap metal so that he could pay for surgery for his wife, who couldn't get social security because she didn't have documents because she was stateless. So this was the story in the movie. But then what happened was that he was a citizen of Bosnia. After the Dayton Agreement that was done in the US, Roma have become even more marginalized because they have no possibility of proper political representation. For example, presidency of Bosnia can be only people who belong to constitutive nations, that is Bosniak, Serbian, and Croatian. So Roma cannot become this part through this kind of representation. In Bosnia, but also in other places in Europe, Roma are discriminated on the labor market. There are many stereotypes against Roma where basically, they would not get a job. That's something that has been documented for so long.
But I think it's more than that. It's just it was not allowed to take up employment. This person was a Bosnian citizen, but he moved to Germany.
Yes.
And then in Germany, he was not allowed to access the formal labor market. And that's why he had to collect scrap metal to support his family. That's, in Germany, could he take employment?
As far as I remember the story, if he was a rejected asylum seeker, then he couldn't.
Yes, he could not for legal reasons.
Yes, yes, correct.
Okay. So what comes to my mind when hearing you talking is that we have a process through which you have rejections of those people based on various reasons. Mm-hmm. And the very process of rejection create a negative feedback loop. That is to say that because they are rejected in the first place, the negative characteristics that lead to the rejection become even more pronounced.
Yes, exactly. That's,
for instance, we were talking about the school at the beginning. So people don't want these people at school. I mean, the public school system at least,
exactly.
And perhaps also the parents of other children don't want to have Roma in the school. Why? Because they don't speak the language, because they don't come from affluent families, because they have different habits, probably. Likewise, many people don't want to have them around. And then the policies implemented in reaction to that, which is to orient them towards different schools, which is in some cases to be extremely reluctant to give them citizenship, which is to limit the formal access to the labor market, which is even to create special programs for them that don't solve any of their problem, but just make them scapegoats of fiscal accusations. All these have the impact of even making them more marginalized. They don't get to the school that could give them some opportunities. They cannot access, in some cases, the labor market. And then they are even more badly considered if they benefit from some programs. So here we have a negative feedback loop towards those people.
If I go back to schooling, first of all, there is a phenomenon called white flight. There were cases in Greece where Romani children were put into separate segregated lower quality buildings that was also at the European Court of Human Rights. In many cases, it is the white flight that justifies segregation of Roma.
What is white flight?
White flight is when majority white parents say that if the school has too high of a percentage of Roma, they will take their kids to other nearby school and they don't want to be in the same school.
So parents don't want to mix their children with them.
Yes.
Okay.
There were cases, for example, in Greece, where there was a European Court of Human Rights where the white parents would say that we do not want to have Romani children with our children, and they were threatening with violence, and they would put Romani children in a separate building. The formal state justification was to protect them, but then the programs were really not as high quality as the programs for the Greek children. I was talking mostly about Roma, but this is the case for other marginalized groups and marginalized citizens around the world. Similar policies work around the globe when it comes to marginalization of indigenous people, when it comes to marginalization of African Americans in the US. And it's really interesting how these parallels are so similar. So we can see that something like racism works very similarly throughout different contexts, even though we have really different groups.
I mean, what we see so far is that there is a movement of rejection of those people due to certain negative characteristics that they have. But then when governments enter into the scene and come up with responses, they end up making the problem even worse. Let's try to take a specific example, which is important for this podcast series, which is the case of the EU's freedom of movement. So many Romani people live inside the EU, and so as when they have citizenship as EU citizens, they benefit from the freedom of movement. You have analyzed the aspect and you have found that whenever there are limitations to the freedom of movement in EU law, they are, of course, applied to Roma people. You give the example of the Dano case. Would you like to describe a bit this case?
Dano case was in Germany, and Dano case didn't deal directly with Roma. It was British tabloids which identified this woman as a Roma. But in the case itself, it was the European Court of Justice case. It was never mentioned that this is a Roma person. It was, like I said, tabloids that actually identified her Roma, because what they try to argue in this case is whether a person who is living, so European Union citizen, which is Romanian citizen in this case, living in Germany, whether or not if they can justifiably receive certain support from the state, welfare support from the state in case they're unemployed. And the thing is that this case became widely spread in the UK because Cameron at that point used this case to say, okay, we're debating Brexit. We can actually limit the rights of EU citizens who are coming to the UK, that they wouldn't get social welfare that is actually equal to British citizens. So that was the connection with the UK. The thing is that we need to also step a little bit back here. We need to step back that Roma are only highlighted. They weren't highlighted in the Dano case. They were only highlighted indirectly when they are seen as problems. We do not see Roma who come and work, for example, in Germany. And there are many, many, many Roma who are, let's say, citizens of Croatia and work in Germany or Austria and so on. But they're invisible. They only become visible as Roma when you would see certain patterns that do not comply with the idea on which European Union freedom of movement was made.
You mentioned as well the case of the incipient mass expulsions of Roma by France around 2010.
Yes. Yes.
So there was an issue with Roma people related to criminality at that moment, if I remember well. But what happened is that the government of Nicolas Sarkozy proceeded to what was, in fact, mass expulsion. It was not just about expulsing possible criminals or criminals. It was broader than that. And then the European Commission stepped in and tried to find a solution in this issue.
Exactly. So first of all, this is something that is brought up so often, that Roma travel to abuse social welfare, which is absolutely not true. Data does not support that. there is enough data to show that Roma do not commit more crime than any other citizens in the European Union. So this is based on stereotypes. And let's see another scenario. And this is not particular to France because expulsions have happened elsewhere as well. But let's take this example because this was an example that was highlighted by the European Commission then. Let's say that we have somebody who is an English citizen living in France and they commit a serious crime. We could not imagine all of the UK citizens to be expelled because one of them committed a crime. This is not imaginable. But when it comes to Roma, that did happen. It happened because I don't think even it was a crime, but it was something that happened. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, these are people are the burden. It was like a pretense. It didn't really, like, from what I remember from the press, that it actually, this criminal actually didn't even happen. But it was a pretense to do this mass expulsion. But again, let's go a little bit back in history. So during the EU negotiations for the post-socialist countries, one of the things that the Copenhagen criteria in 93 said that you need to have minority protection. And it really did focus on Roma a lot. And the reason why it focused on Roma was that, okay, we have Roma whose rights are not respected in their country, they were actually afraid that there's going to be a mass flight. If we actually look how many Roma move to Western Europe, we'll see that they're not that many. They're not disproportionately presented among people who are more within the European Union from Poland, Romania. Roma are not overrepresented in this group. This is something that is also a myth that you would say, okay, there are more Roma moving. And it was also except Brexit, where they did use these fears. Oh my God, if you open the labor market for Romanians and Bulgarians, you will have so many Roma coming to Great Britain, which never actually happened.
So the problem was partly thanks to EU funding for a so-called voluntary repatriation program of Roma towards Romania, most often.
So this was a little bit also tricky. It was a little bit difficult for me to find direct proof of that. But the point was that there was this voluntary repatriation program. Roma who were asked to voluntarily repatriate to Romania were given a certain amount of money and said, okay, this is how you will get your businesses going in Romania or Bulgaria. But that did not address the fact that Roma are still discriminated both in France and Romania and Bulgaria. And it's impossible just to say, okay, you have a certain amount of money, which was a really small amount, and you will start your own business and you will address the problem. So it's not fixing the core problem that was discrimination and racism. A number of people who went to Romania came back afterwards because it did not cause what they thought it would cause. But what is even more interesting than this voluntary repatriation program was that after what happened in France, the European Commission started thinking, okay, it is not only former socialist countries that are racist and discriminatory towards Roma, it is a European-wide issue. So Romani groups face racism in Ireland, they face racism in the UK, in Spain, in Portugal, in a number of old EU member states, and that was not addressed and they were not put under the same scrutiny as, for example, the countries that were trying to join the EU. And at that point, the Commission introduced the European framework for national Romani integration strategies.
But regarding the repatriation program, this was EU funding that paid for the return of those people, a one-way ticket to their country of origin. And this is how the problem was solved with France, so that people it would not be a mass expulsion by force. So I have really two questions about that. Yeah. So first is, were there similar cases of expulsions of Roma beside France in 2010, inside the EU, I mean. And the second question is, has any other country benefited from this funding for Roma repatriation except France?
Yeah. So it wasn't directly Roma repatriation. It was the question of Romania and Bulgaria, and also to a certain extent, countries from former Yugoslavia. So there are two different funds. One was for the EU citizens, and the other one was for former asylum seekers from former Yugoslav wars. This was a specific program that France applied for. So it was only in France. However, other countries have expelled Roma from time to time in a similar manner. I would say Italy. I don't think it was in the same year, 2010, but it had really bad programs that would encourage expulsion of Roma. There are many other cases, maybe a smaller scale, where Roma would be expelled from different European Union member states. The big case was also in Germany, and that was a little bit different because it was about people who would be considered as asylum seekers, but they were actually asylum seekers. They were the distillation, Duldung process during the former Yugoslav war. So they are not supposed to be deported while the war was still going on in former Yugoslavia. However, what happened when the conflict officially stopped was that in the middle of the night, a number of Roma would be actually put on planes. So let's say at 4 a.m, said, okay, you can pack only the essential and put to places like Kosovo. And what that meant is, for example, in Germany, you would have kids that were born in Germany, never saw anything else but Germany, and then all of a sudden they would find themselves in a new reality, like Kosovo, like Serbia, and so on. And some of them said that they only found out that they were Roma when they were put into this new reality, because they didn't know anything else but Germany. So this is the other example, but it has to do more with expulsions of people who were given certain protections because they were fleeing war. Not refugee status, so this is another problem because many people do not get refugee status, as you know very well from your research, but they were expelled as well.
I mean, the pattern here, it seems to me, policies make the situation worse. Because those policies are ill-framed. We were talking about the expression of in France earlier, that is, you have some cases of criminality that can be traced back to Romani individuals or even perhaps to some Romani groupings. And instead of moving toward the criminals, you end up massively expanding the culprits.
Yes.
Which is something very common. And not only applied to Roma, you just need to listen to political debates today to see this mechanism at play.
Exactly.
Against Romani, but against many other types of people.
Exactly.
And when you expand the list of problematic people beyond the criminals, not only you are not going to find an easy solution to criminality, and you are going to create a range of other problems. It's another example of assigning responsibility for criminality to an entire group based on ethnic characteristics. State policy should just be more limited as far as Romani are concerned. And about this very notion of citizenship. At the end of the day, why is it that we have citizenship? That's a broader question. States, because they are based on force, they are here at least to preserve against criminality, preserve against thefts, preserve against aggression, murders, and so on. And so they should limit themselves to do that. But then when they create citizenship programs, which is a way to also eliminate some people, you have other range of issues because then they are not going to provide security to those they have eliminated. They may treat them indiscriminately. They may reject them from labor market participation, perhaps from certain educational opportunities that at the end of the day create also an ethnic pattern. That is, as states create ethnic discrimination, you end up having an ethnic pattern of people who are poorer than the rest of the population, perhaps seem different. At the end of the day, the point should be to focus on actual cases of criminality and just don't interfere with the rest. Would you be something that you think could be a solution?
First of all, I think that criminality should be definitely decoupled from any ethnic assumptions. There is a lot of assumptions, and this is proven not just with Roma, but also African Americans, that there are beliefs among the police that it is more likely that somebody who is African American would commit a crime, which is, of course, a product of perceptions. And it is a vicious perception that creates certain patterns.
It's always completely counterproductive, whatever it is. Yeah. It's just the main problem of that, it's counterproductive. But it's not necessarily about policemen perceptions, because that is something more tricky. It's just that you need to chase those who have committed a crime. The case of mass expulsion is something more, I think, concrete. Because then you really make the problem much worse.
I mean, if we look at all the decrees that Sarkozy at the time did, he was really trying to say that this is not about Roma. But when you went to different decrees, you would see that it's mentioned that Roma communities should be targeted. And that's the problem, because they were targeting on, I would say, even racial basis, not only ethnic basis, but it was pure racism that was doing this. And it was based on policies that, on one hand, did not address the discrimination. And of course, many Roma did not work because they couldn't get employment because of the perception of who Roma are. But what I'm trying to say here, okay, crime definitely should be individualized, and it should not in any way have consequences for group. Collective punishments and collective expulsions are forbidden by the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights. All the European Union member states have agreed to this. The problem is they do happen, and there are a lot of questions that need to be addressed here. One question is that we need to think about what actually produces the marginalization that you talked about earlier. And we do need to rethink the basic building blocks of the states. That is, for example, citizenship. What does citizenship do? The policies and legislation about citizenship. We shouldn't only focus on how it is all inclusive, but we also need to see where it produces exclusion. And here I was trying to draw a broader case that we should not focus only, oh, Roma are an exception. They're not an exception. There are many other groups that are marginalized that find themselves in a similar position. And we should address the marginalization rather than focusing on what the particular marginalized group should do. So that was what I was trying to argue in my book.
And so I suppose this is a problem on which there have been a lot of debates. Do you think that there is a genuine demand for expertise in this field from governments, organizations, institutions?
So there has been, yes. As I mentioned in the beginning, I think it's really important that Roma and Romani scholars should have a genuine say. So this is the first thing that needs to be done. Also, to a certain extent, certain NGO activists do need to highlight the problems and the processes. Like, for example, I try to highlight what's the problem with the fringes of citizenship in my book. However, first of all, I think that there should be really an inclusion of people who have lived experience, who have theoretical knowledge on one hand, but on the other hand, they also have this lived experience of being Roma. And what does this mean? That you're afraid to walk on the street because you know you're going to be targeted by the police. So this is one thing. The other thing, so I try to frame my work not so much within Romani studies. It is connected to critical Romani studies, but what I try to say is something about citizenship that has been ignored and how actually citizenship in Europe has been constructed. And I think this is something that we'll have to keep on asking. And this is not simply about the position of Roma. It is about the position of many citizens who are marginalized, be it people who are still considered migrants, even though they have been, let's say, in different countries for many, many generations. It usually has to do with colonialism. So when we talk about like somebody's fifth generation, third generation migrant, so when do you become just citizen? And when do you not become third generation migrant or whatever? So there has been things like this. So this is what I think that will have to be addressed. And I think it's getting more and more addressed. But there are two things to be decoupled. One is like I said, that basically Roma individuals, Romani scholars should have the seat at the table, which has been in many spaces ignored when it comes to the experience of Roma, but also how theoretically to address the racism that Roma particularly face. On the other hand, I think that if we are responsible scholars, we do need to like also talk about mechanisms that produce marginalization. And I think that there is something that has been addressed. European Union has created new programs for participation and basically equality and inclusion of Roma, but there have been also broader programs that do, to a certain extent, at least agree that the racism needs to be addressed in Europe as well. And that's towards Roma, who is the biggest and most discriminated minority in Europe, but also towards other groups that have been basically targeted by racist policies and also racist attacks.
Yeah, being said, our social programs are generally not
effective. That's a problem.
As we were saying earlier, may even create resentment in the rest of the population. And
I think that we need to talk about the building blocks of citizenship. I mean,
and it's not just the resentment, it's also the fact that they don't work often, those programs. And it's, as you say, citizenship, it's a conception of the state. What is the state? And
is the state
here to provide services to people? Or is the state here to select and to say, we exclude some, we include some, based on some irrational views sometimes? And so, first of all, let's try to remove all these mechanisms that produce marginalization, and then let's see how it evolves. But anyway, let's conclude on that. Julia, thank you very much for your contribution to this reflection. Please share final thoughts you would like to share on this issue and possible solution, and tell us also where listeners can follow you and your work.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me to your podcast. I'm really honored to be here. I don't want to end on a pessimistic note, but I think until we address the building blocks and the conceptions of both the states and what is the basis of the state, I don't think that marginalization will be addressed. But there is a positive note that I talk about fringes of citizenship, where we see people who have been marginalized, let's say, by racist practices by the state and so on, do also start addressing this. We have a number of fantastic Romani scholars, number of fantastic civil society activists, also politicians as well, who are Roma. And I think this is a really important move on one hand. On the other hand, we do need to all think about what kind of knowledge we produce and whether we reproduce certain patterns that actually contribute to this marginalization or actually do produce the knowledge that does address it. Where you can follow my work, I am not, given that I'm a mom of two very small kids, so two babies, I'm not actually active on social media, unfortunately. But on the other hand, the book has been published with Manchester University Press. It's open access, everybody can read the book open access, thanks to Manchester University Press. There will be some new things published by me and also in collaborations where I address not just the position of Roma, but these patterns of exclusion and basically hierarchical, dimensions of policy that, for example, include certain people but exclude the others. So this is something that I'm interested in, the further dynamics, which does reflect the position of Roma, but not only position of Roma, also the position of refugees, because we know that not all refugees get the same treatment and so on. So this is, for example, something what I'm interested in as well. I would end on this note. Thank you very much for inviting me, and I do hope that people do also think about these issues, not as something that is a Roma-related issue, but maybe more to the building blocks of state and citizenship, as you mentioned.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.